Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.
So, Patrick, Coyote versus Acme?
Yes.
Is in theaters, which means we need to know Kay Wash's favorite Looney Tunes character.
Oh, yes. You mean Kara's favorite Looney Tunes character?
Yeah, we're not sticking with that.
One or the other. I think it might stick, but go on, Kara. Do you have a favorite Looney Tune?
Not really, but I'll go with Tweety.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go with that one.
That's a decent default.
Tweety?
Yeah.
Bugs Bunny. Well,
okay, Tweety might be my least favorite.
Okay, really? Bugs Bunny. Oh.
Okay.
Thank you. Can I do that one?
No, you can love Tweety.
Just going to cross off one of my guesses
I despise that bird. I hate it. So we thought we would try to guess each other's.
Yes.
So I went to Vicky, mm-hmm. and she had two for you.
Okay.
She said Daffy Duck.
Nope.
Or Porky Pig.
Nope.
And I thought to myself, I know that you have a very strong feeling about Pepe Le Pew.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you hate him.
Yeah, I never cared for Pepe.
Okay, all right. So you hate Pepe.
I think I would turn off Looney Tunes when those episodes came on.
So I could see a Hawkeye guy going Bugs Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go a little off the chosen path and say, for you, it's Marvin the Martian.
I really hate that you said that one.
Is it Marvin the Martian?
It is Marvin, yes. I love Marvin.
See how well I know you?
I have always loved Marvin.
He's very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went through a very big phase of...
it's a good stuff.
I do actually have a lot of Marvin the Martian stuff, but I couldn't bring it without tipping my hand. So
very good.
So I had a guess for yours.
Yes.
And I tried to think of which character was most in keeping with your values, because the Looney Tunes characters are pretty violent.
That's a fair point.
So there was really one option.
I think you're going to miss it.
And it's Porky Pig.
That's not Porky Pig.
No. Is it Daffy? Because that was my other guess.
No, although runner-up for me would be Darkwing Duck.
Oh, okay. Also, I thought maybe Roadrunner, because he's not particularly violent.
No, I don't like Roadrunner. My favorite, this is going to disappoint you, was always Sylvester.
Really?
Yeah, Sylvester's my favorite.
And you scoffed at Kara's Tweety?
Well, they're arch enemies. Like, if I'm rooting for Sylvester, which I think says something about me, I'm rooting for the guy that I know every time is going to fail.
Yeah.
But you know, Patrick?
You know what never fails?
You know what never fails?
Yeah. Is Pop Shop Pop coming Shop. Up next.
Hi, I'm Alan Austin.
And I'm Patrick Hamilton.
Welcome to Pop Shop. Here, stories on the screen inspire conversations about the real world off of it.
And this week, we're talking about the live action combined with animated film Coyote versus Acme, in which the Looney Tunes' Wile E. Coyote finally sues the Acme Corporation over years of their faulty products.
If you are enjoying this show more than Wile E. Coyote enjoys Acme products, please make sure that you like, you subscribe, you turn on the old notifications.
And Pop Shop is brought to you by the F.M. Kirby Center, and we'll be talking with someone from there in just a little bit.
It's always good to have a little bit of mystery about who might be coming, because they're both big personalities.
Right. All kinds of surprises in store on today's episode.
But before someone gets here, we should set up the show.
Yes, we should.
So, Patrick, what if I told you that everything you knew about Looney Tunes was a lie?
I would call you a liar.
What if I told you that under the surface of laughs and hilarity lies a dark corporate conspiracy? What if I told you that Wile E. Coyote was at the center of all of it? And as we unpack that mystery, we're never going to be able to look at Wile E. Coyote in the same way. Well, Coyote versus Acme, the movie, explores all of these questions and more. As Patrick just noted, Wile E. Coyote finally sues the Acme Corporation and its nefarious CEO, Foghorn Leghorn. Can Wile E. Coyote find the truth? Can we, the viewers, handle the truth? Those are the questions that are put into play as this courtroom drama of sorts plays out as only Looney Tunes could produce such a drama.
Yes, and in this movie, or what other people call it, a movie, besides all of your favorite
Looney
Tunes...
Did I say movie?
Yeah, you said movie.
Did I really?
Yes. All
Move
of your
me.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
I don't know.
Please
but
continue.
You totally said it. All your favorite Looney Tunes characters are present, either in major roles or a cameo, along with a number of live action actors. Will Forte plays Kevin Avery, who is Wile's attorney. Lana Condor, who was Jubilee in X-Men Apocalypse, plays his niece and intern Paige. And then, of course, John Cena is Buddy Crane, the head of Acme's legal department and law school rival of Avery.
Yeah. So I mean, it sounds like a great move, me.
It does. It,
I'm going to just roll with that, and Kara can fix all of them in post. It'll sound substantially more.
That's good, because we make Kara's life easier.
That's our goal, usually.
Yes.
So we were thinking, as we talked about this film, that we might start by talking about some of the challenges that come with making a film that stars a character that can't speak and is a coyote.
Yes.
And is not a human.
Yes.
So, like, how do you make that character more human? How do you make it relatable? If you can't make people invest emotionally in Wile E. Coyote, it's just a series of one gag after another. So what are the challenges that you saw, and how successfully do you think the film addressed them?
Well, I think, I mean, the biggest challenge is obviously that, Wile E. Coyote doesn't speak in the film. He has on occasion spoken very briefly in a handful of, like, Looney Tunes cartoons, but predominantly he does not speak. And also, the film didn't really use a lot of potential shortcuts, such as having the live-action characters explain what he was saying. And they didn't use the signs, as much as they could have, and even kind of made it a running joke.
Well, the signs were used in a way to kind of point to how mute Wile E. Coyote actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I saw them using a number of different techniques, though, to try to get us to understand Coyote as a real character and not just a two-dimensional cartoon.
Yeah.
One of which was his story arc, which I'll do without spoilers. But when you enter the movie, we all kind of see Wile E. Coyote as a bad guy, right? Like, he's the guy that's always trying to get and eat the Roadrunner.
I mean, that's kind of what we come into the film with him as, because he's always been kind of, you know, the bad guy going after Roadrunner and sort of getting his well-deserved comeuppance.
So we assume, that he's the bad guy, but we very quickly learn that he's actually a victim, that the Acme Corporation has been using him in various different ways. For their own purposes. And then we start, it's a misunderstood victim. We start, maybe start getting pulled into empathizing with Coyote, rooting for Coyote even, until we realize that part of the reason he files the court case is it's just another contraption he's building to try to capture Roadrunner.
Yeah.
And so he's really complicated. And I think that's one of the things the film does to make us feel like Wile E. Coyote is not just a cartoon character, but he's very human in his flaws, right? Not unlike we talked about with Ted Lasso, that somebody might aspire to be kind but have moments where they fall short. I think Wile E. Coyote kind of fits in that way. And in that way, he veers towards human. And I think at the same time, the film uses John Cena, especially, but Will Forte as well a little bit, to kind of move humans towards cartoon. Here's my argument.
Okay.
I think John Cena's, some of his best work comes in slightly cartoonish roles.
Yeah,
and I think
agree with that.
I think that started with his wrestling career. Yeah. Right? It's not surprising
I mean, he's always been kind of that larger-than-life kind of character that also kind of verges on cartoon and camp in a lot
goofy,
of ways.
A goofy, campy, kind of cartoony character.
Yeah.
He was the perfect guy to cast, I think, as Buddy Crane.
Yeah.
His physicality... but also just the general sense of humor that he brings to his roles. The longer he's on the screen, the more he verges towards a cartoon.
Yeah.
And as the two sides, as the cartoons become more human and the humans become more cartoon, all of a sudden you're watching a movie where the humans and the cartoons exist in a way in which they're co-equals in the film. And I don't remember a lot of films like this before where I felt that way.
I mean, probably the closest thing to it, which there's a number of comparisons, and I think the filmmakers have even said this, is that it's very much kind of inspired by Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Exactly. Which was one where you felt that kind of relationship between cartoon and human to the point where all of a sudden you feel like you're living in a world where just cartoons and humans naturally coexist with each other.
To a certain extent. I don't know that this film quite achieved that in the way that, Roger Rabbit did. I think the other thing in terms of Wile E. Coyote that kind of going back to the idea of the challenges that the film presents is that because he is silent and because they're not relying on the signs and other sort of narrative devices, for lack of a better term, to kind of convey his story, it means that a lot has to be done visually. A lot needs to be communicated through him visually. And I think that's one of the places where the movie really stood out for me was in the animation. And the way in which that the animation really worked to, as you said, sort of to humanize Wile E. Coyote.
And there are a couple of ways the film 100% worked that way for me, too. One of which is the wear and tear yeah. on Wile E. Coyote. In the cartoons, he always gets beaten up, mm-hmm. but he shows up in the next scene and he's refreshed and he's ready to go. Yeah. This film, you really felt like Wile E. Coyote was worn out mm-hmm. by it all. That well, he's just been like so physically abused. He looks like yeah. an NFL veteran mm-hmm. of 15 years, right? Who's yeah. who sacrificed his body mm-hmm. to the game or to the show in this case. And he's going to be on ibuprofen and, you know, ice baths for and the rest of his life.
Possibly stronger things as well. Right. But yeah, it's yeah. one of the things that's interesting in that obviously the cartoon worked very episodically in that basically, right. you know, Roadrunner and Wile E kind of reset mm-hmm. at the end of each cartoon. And the premise of this film is actually linking all of those together, particularly in terms of when you see
right.
all the different sort of devices that Wile E has purchased from Acme mm-hmm. over the years. And, you know, it sort of takes what was sort of episodic and very sort of discrete episodes and kind of puts them into a sort of story logic to generate what happens in the film.
In a really powerful way, because so many of those episodes get stitched into this movie.
Yeah.
So that if you've watched these, like I did as a kid, over yeah. and over and over again, mm-hmm. you recognize
many of them.
The stories that are happening. Yeah. And you recognize the moments that are happening.
Yeah.
And then you start all of a sudden, to your point, thinking about the way in which, oh, this isn't episodic
yeah.
for Wile E. Coyote. This is mm-hmm. his life.
Yeah, which I will say yeah. one of the things I was... Because, you know, they went through and they kind of showed or incorporated into the film many of the Wile E. Coyote traditional gags. You know,
right.
the yep. rocket skates, you know, him standing on what seems like the more solid side of the cliff and that falling.
Still the makes one, me laugh. When the one, bat wing where he's flying.
Yes, where he's flying. he flies the one thing they didn't do, I mean, they gesture yeah. towards it, but they didn't do yeah. it quite, was when he does when he paints the cave or the tunnel on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
And Roadrunner yeah. goes through it, but he falls smack right up against it.
Yeah.
We do get a moment where they kind of reference to that, but for me, yeah. that's kind of the quintessential Wile E. Coyote gag.
Yeah.
And that we didn't quite get that. Along with the others, was one of the places where I was just a teensy bit disappointed.
But the film also worked well visually in smaller ways. Mm-hmm. Like, just seeing his eye, Wile E. Coyote's
eyes. Yeah, the eyes, I think, are a big part of how his character works.
The facial features, and you could feel his pain, mm-hmm. I think, as you watched it. So yeah. as we're laughing, I mean, mm-hmm. one of the best ways to do pain, I think, is to do it with laughter.
Yeah.
That juxtaposition works really well.
Well, and I think also, not to get too much into spoilers, that also kind of puts the audience in parallel to kind of what's going on around Wile E and what's going around in the world of the film as well, as we'll sort of get to in the second part of the right. episode.
But by the time we're done, he's a pretty complex character, mm-hmm. Wile E. Coyote, and we're kind of feeling for him
yep.
along the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about that after we chat with the FM Kirby Center.
Hey, Patrick, somebody is here from the Kirby.
That's right. It's Gene from the Kirby Center. You're going to tell us all about what's going on there.
Welcome, Gene.
Hello, I'm here.
Yes.
It was me. I was the one who was teased. Well, don't tease me. I was being teased. Okay, never mind.
No, we weren't teasing you.
No.
No, we were
teasing someone. Well, in the attempt to tease his appearance on the show, we may have not done the smoothest of jobs.
Right. The tease could have been a better tease.
Yes.
That's okay. I forgive you. Yeah. I'm here now.
Well, excellent. We appreciate that very much. So what are you teasing about the Kirby?
I'm teasing Ray LaMontagne. He's going to be at the Kirby Center next Wednesday with his Trouble 20th anniversary tour. Okay. So he put out the album Trouble more than 20 years ago now because the show had to be delayed, but that's okay. He'll be here next Wednesday and he'll play an awesome show. He'll play that album from front to back and then he'll play other favorites from his catalog. So if you are a Ray LaMontagne fan, come to the show. You're going to love this show. If you're not a fan or if you're just getting to know who he is, this is the one you want to go to because this will give you a deep dive into the rest of his catalog, plus his fan favorite album that people really gravitate to.
Very cool. There's something, like one of my favorite shows are often when an artist actually plays the album from front to back, but that's because I'm old and I used to listen to albums in their entirety. Like they were
Stopped at I used to listen to albums.
Fair point. A little redundant, perhaps.
Yeah.
No, those are great shows because you usually get the stories behind some of the songs too.
Yeah.
Or stories about what was happening to him during that point of his career, which that was a big moment. He was in movies with those songs, TV shows,
yeah.
A commercial. So that'll be a good show.
Sounds awesome.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming to share. Much appreciated.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having us. We really appreciate it.
Of course. And we appreciate your support of Pop Shop.
There's a lot of appreciation around the table.
There is indeed.
Yeah.
I feel appreciated and not teased.
Excellent.
So we've recovered from our faux pas at the beginning of this, which is what we do as professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd say the narrative is complete.
As always, it is so great to have had Gene in the studio.
That's right, and always good to hear about what's going on at the FM Kirby Center.
Absolutely true.
Yes.
Now we should turn our attention back to the Move Me.
Yes, to the Move Me.
I'm going to pretend as if Move Me was just the intentional.
Yes.
Yeah.
What won't work with that is the part where you were surprised when I pointed out that you had said that. That's going to kind of take away the magic of it. Unless Kara fixed that in post, too.
Kara, thank you. If you could just like fix it both ways.
Yeah.
That would be best.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kara. Mm-hmm. The thing about Kara is you can always count on her.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes.
You know what you can't count on in America?
The Acme Corporation?
Big corporations in general, right? And this film definitely functions as a corporate critique.
Oh, yes. Very much so.
Which is a very delicate dance, I think, whenever Hollywood does this. I did a quick Google search of Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
They have raked in, according to my very unscientific search of like 30 seconds on Google, something like $17.5 billion.
Yes, yeah, they are a massive revenue. Sort of
they are franchise a massive themselves, franchise yeah. that's going to now teach us about our need to protest and be upset with these very large franchises.
Yes,
and I hope that they're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Just put my concern to rest, if you could.
I'll try.
That they show us this revolt against capitalism on the screen as a way of sublimating our desire to revolt against capitalism in real life.
Mm.
That we do it sort of through the characters on the screen so that when we go back to our real life, we kind of continue being the corporate drones that we are.
Well, see, here's what helps with that.
Yes.
Is because, of course, the backstory of the film in which it was completely made, was supposed to originally come out, I think, in like 2023.
Yep.
And then for a tax write-off, Warner Brothers shelved the film.
Yeah.
And then it's a smaller film distributor, Ketchup, I think is its name, that actually bought the rights to the film and is, you know, putting it out in theaters and promoting and whatnot. So you know, it's not big Warner Brothers that's putting this film out. It's small, so independent, feisty Ketchup Entertainment.
You're not putting my concerns to rest
no?
at all. You're selling me more of the Kool-Aid that we're supposed to be drinking.
I was trying.
Yeah, I appreciate it. But certainly, I guess if we're going to start with the corporate critique, we're going to start with what you already mentioned, the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-reaching Acme Corporation, which is, it's kind of lovely in this film to see an Acme label on everything.
Everything, yeah.
Because nothing people use, which is obviously a commentary on corporate consolidation and the way in which fewer and fewer corporations control more and more of our lives.
I mean, there's no way that we could possibly think of a single business that sort of dominates our lives in the same way that also starts with an A.
No.
Yeah.
Or that sells us all kinds of apps for free because they just really care about us and want us to play, and they're not really spying into our own lives.
Exactly.
Much like the Acme Corporation is doing with these cartoon characters, right? We are the cartoon characters in real life because all the stuff we do on our phone is just them testing on us to see what they can then sell us.
Yeah, which is, it's kind of interesting the way in which Wile E. Coyote and the other sort of Looney Tunes characters all sort of form an underclass within the world of the film.
Yeah.
That they are, you know, what the Acme Corporation uses to develop, you know, they experiment on the Looney Tunes in order to develop products for the human population in their world.
Right. It's essentially animal testing on some level, right? That we can wear makeup or the cologne or whatever that we wear. Because
or they'll, you know, poke Daffy full of holes and he'll spray water and that gives us our sprinklers that spray the water back and forth.
Same thing, right?
Yeah.
And Acme is huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's evil, and it's unbeatable.
Yes.
One of my favorite scenes, and Cena, I think, steals the movie in a couple of moments, but one is when they're in court for the first time, and he stands up and he gives this kind of summation, and
he says,
this is about freedom, and this is about personal choice, and this is about supporting the troops, and this is about, like, loving your country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is this real truth in that moment where big corporations in this country have done such a good job of wrapping themselves in the flag that we have trouble disentangling corporations and patriotism.
Yeah.
And so if you criticize corporations, and all of a sudden people holler out that you're a communist. But mm-hmm. I would argue you could actually criticize those corporations from mm-hmm. a very pro-democracy mm-hmm. kind of position.
Well, and right? we're also very often urged during times of struggle or strife or whatever to demonstrate our patriotism and support for the country by shopping. You know, that's, you know, what, you know.
Well, after 9/11, George Bush quite famously said, you know, what can Americans do?
Yeah.
And like after Pearl Harbor, it was, you can buy war bonds, yeah. you can volunteer, you can serve. There's all these sacrifices you can make.
Yeah.
You know, George Bush's call to Americans was pretty much, keep
go shopping. Yep.
Yeah.
That was one.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It is.
Well, it's kind of like when, I can't remember his name, I think it was Charles Wilson was being considered by Congress to be the Secretary of Defense mm-hmm. in 1953. And he says, what's good for business mm-hmm. is good for America.
Yeah.
Well, right, that famous quote, right?
Good thing we've moved away from that sort of philosophy.
Well, or good thing we've leaned into that philosophy. Because aren't all of our lives demonstrably better in material ways?
I'm glad we've got you on tape saying that, because that will come in handy down the road.
No, I'm sure Kara's going to put a little bubble underneath that says, clearly sarcasm,
yeah.
do not take out of context.
Or just a little sign behind us, like Wile E. Coyote signs.
That would be great. Doesn't mean it.
Yeah. But I wasn't. So,
thanks, Kara.
So there's a couple other things that I really like about what this film does. Number one, we mentioned John Cena, but we cannot forget that Foghorn Leghorn is the head corporate honcho of Acme. And given that he's my least favorite Looney Tunes character, I was totally fine.
Can I say though
with that?
Kind of typecasting.
A little.
Particular
I do
role.
Kind of enjoy the contrast between Wile E. Coyote, who doesn't speak, and Foghorn, who never gets tired of hearing himself speak. I did kind of like that contrast.
Well, because he lives in this kind of bubble of wealth and privilege where he just assumes that the court is going to shut down for him to give a speech.
Yeah.
And he just assumes that everybody wants to hear what he has to say.
Yeah. But it's one of the things that's interesting, because another critique that the film makes, that obviously the critique of Acme and capitalism is pretty clear.
Yeah.
But I thought the climax in the courtroom, when Foghorn Leghorn gets up there, having been accused of the animal mm-hmm. testing and things like that, and he just openly admits to it. And he says something mm-hmm. to the effect of, isn't their pain, you know...
I've got the quote.
...worth... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that you must suffer some pain in order to have progress.
Yeah, that there's right? that. And everyone in the room sort of cheers for that idea.
Right.
And I thought, as much as there's a critique of... kind of, you know, the corporate behemoth Acme, there's also a critique of the consumers that are perfectly willing to accept what's being done to Wile E. Coyote and the other Looney Tunes as long as it gives them their stuff.
In that world, I think it's a little bit easier to cheer because if you're a human, you're not having the testing done on you.
Yeah.
But to your point, we cheer this progress in our world too, mm-hmm. and yet we are the guinea pigs. It's just in a less painful, less obvious way.
Yeah.
That we're being sort of gauged and measured and algorithmed to marketing to marketing effort is just it's where we live.
Well, and it's only
but don't we cheer for it?
Cheer
mostly?
for
the progress, even if it comes at this cost to us. That there's this short term iPhone Looney Tunes glassware kind of. Lifestyle. Did I make it too personal?
I didn't mean to.
But the point being, I think that's true for all of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that when you live in this capitalist economy, it's convincing you that it's okay to suffer in certain ways or to give away parts of yourself because you're going to have on the other end this materialistic life.
But I think also in this film, it also goes a little bit further because in the film, they're not the ones being experimented upon. It's the Looney Tunes and the underclass. So.
Right.
You know, the population in the film is perfectly happy with others that are deemed lesser, others that are different from them.
So others who work without labor protection today, others who work for a wage that doesn't allow them to,
to
feed their family.
There was a much darker sort of take on kind of the consuming public in this film. And it's only at the very end of the film, the cartoon characters themselves... bond together and basically form a class action suit
because that
Acme gets overturned and Cena and Foghorn get arrested.
Because the answer to this film, it's not in Congress. Like when you go to Congress, Elmer Fudd is sitting up there as kind of the token guy to show that like cartoons have some kind of equality. But the congressional hearing is fixed, just like the court case is fixed. And, you know, I have the same conclusion here. The only real solution to the problem is for individuals to stand up, establish solidarity, and challenge
the exploited individuals.
Right, to challenge the fundamental the fundamental inequalities built into it.
Yeah, those who fundamentally benefit from the system are not going to help change the system.
Right, right. Absolutely. Those at the very top, for sure.
Yeah, not. which is very much weird. And so that was something that I saw kind of quietly subversive in the film.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But you know what is never subversive?
What?
Taking a movie like this.
Yes.
And reducing it to a one-word assessment.
Yes.
Pop.
Or shop.
Those are the two choices.
Those are the two choices.
And we always very closely align with those two choices.
We do.
It either pops or it shops. There's no pluses or minuses.
Nope.
So are we ready to go?
I think so.
Shall I go first?
Okay.
I feel like I haven't gone first in
a while.
That's fine. Okay. Yeah. Kara, did you see it?
I did not.
Okay.
So Kara.
I am out on this one.
Okay. Shall neither pop nor shop. I guess there is a third option.
Yeah, there, yeah.
Yes. Which is K-wash indifference.
Yes.
Just put up indifferent. All right. So mine is a pop. Just a pure pop.
Just a pure pop.
I have to tell you, I really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah.
More than I thought I was going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
More than I thought I would enjoy this movie. Like, number one, I laughed through the whole movie.
Yeah.
So remember the Ed test from back in the day when we talked about, was it Abbott Elementary? And he's like, you never talked about whether it was funny.
Yes.
I think this is a genuinely funny movie.
In the way that Looney Tunes films and cartoons have generally been. It feels very much of a piece with them.
It was true to the Looney Tunes humor, but like I haven't laughed in a film. This felt like stepping back into my childhood in some ways. Like so like I am maybe kind of a victim of that. It manages to be very funny, and it also manages the critique that we've just spent 10 minutes talking about. It's not the Marx Brothers.
Yeah.
But it has kind of the Marx Brothers quality of doing very broad comedy and social critique and blending them together. If you have not seen Duck Soup, I'm just speaking to the audience briefly.
Like you're almost chastising them.
Go see Duck Soup. It's so funny.
It's a great movie.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time, honestly. Maybe top five, top ten. It's like it is so funny.
So you're setting aside the MCU there because there's no way that anything else is getting.
It is
the top
better
10.
Than anything the MCU has ever
that is
moved made. Me, so So to me, it's a pop. I just had so much fun with this.
Yeah.
How about you, Patrick?
Keeping with how I usually do things, I gave it a what's pop, Doc.
I knew you were going with some kind of a. I thought you were going to do something with That's All, Folks.
Nope. Yeah. I went, what's pop, Doc? Because it sounds
fun.
What's
pop, Doc? Yes. So, and it says, also, I wasn't
also,
totally
I was totally right about John Stewart and his father in Lanterns.
Oh, good for you.
You said we needed to have a secret message for the episode, so that was
not
the secret.
Not so secret now that I've
secret.
Read it.
We're
and
easing
you've
people
it.
Into the secret. Yes, I was
next
totally
time,
right.
Next time, look for the secret
totally
message.
Totally right. So, but yeah, for many of the same reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the story goes kind of where you expect it to go.
But with a couple of twists that,
a few,
that
but
complicate the, yeah. the coyote. But go
but,
on.
But ultimately, I you know, the film is smarter than, you know, we maybe tend to give cartoon films credit for, and certainly as people are expecting. So, I really enjoyed the film. It's a fun movie.
You thought it was funny?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I chuckled a few times, particularly at the way they play with, you know, Wile E. Coyote. And kind of his sort of shtick and kind of move him beyond the one-dimensional character that he's always been.
Although I have to say, I still laugh when I see the old stuff.
Yeah.
Like when you know, even when you know it's coming.
Yeah.
I think Vicky thought it was a little weird how much I enjoyed this movie. Yeah. Although she really enjoyed the movie too.
Yeah.
But
yeah. No, it's a fun movie. I'm glad that Ketchup came in and was able to, you know, squeeze some money together and get it onto film.
It's something that we might relish.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
It definitely cuts the mustard.
Well, anyway, we should probably catch up with the program.
Yes, we should.
At this point,
yes.
Though. Yeah. This is usually where you say,
oh, yeah, that's
thank
right.
you
that's
for right. yes, joining us. For
So thank you for joining us at WVIA's Pop Shop. And if you enjoyed everything or, you know, a good deal of what you heard today,
or even just a little bit,
you should like the episode, subscribe to the series, and turn on notifications so you never miss us talking about all the movies and other things that come out.
But especially the movies. And thanks so much to Gene and the Kirby Center, as always, for their support.
Yes. And next week, we're going to jump into the Pop Shop Wayback Machine.
Ooh, do we have a Wayback Machine?
We do. We must, because we're going way back to talk about The Godfather.
Yes, soon to be on the screen at the Kirby.
Yes, indeed.
So something for
giving
us to talk about.
Giving you a little bit of a preview before it plays at the FM Kirby Center.
The Move Me Center. Come join the party.
Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the FM Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.